I didn't know any women in relationships with women. I didn't know any men in relationships with men. So it's not like I was going, oh, but I want that. It was like, well, I'd never seen it. So it wasn't something I wanted, but copping off with guys was something that I had done and I knew I liked that. So I wanted more of that.
Hello, my name's Kay Anderson and you are listening to Lost Spaces, the podcast that mourns the death of queer nightlife. Every episode I talk to a different person about a venue from their past, the memories that they created there, and the people that they used to know. So I have a question to start off this week's episode, and that is, can you really call yourself queer if you don't have a toxic, weird, love-hate relationship with your hometown? And I'm going to answer that question immediately by saying no. I think the answer is no. And the reason that I think that is that even if you love to pieces the place where you grew up and you had this idyllic childhood, it still kind of represents this place where you came to learn about yourself. And by that I mean like figure out your sexuality or your gender identity. And you had all those feelings of shame and isolation to deal with, and all of the anticipatory feelings of judgment and scorn, and sometimes even real judgment and scorn, depending on who you are. Which brings us to this week's guest. I'm not saying that we should pour judgment and scorn on this week's guest. I'm just saying that he had this kind of experience in his hometown and he knows exactly what I'm talking about, hopefully. I'm kind of just digging myself a hole here. Why don't I just introduce you to who he is? So this week's guest is the singer-songwriter Matt Fishel. And Matt grew up in Nottingham, England in the 90s. And it was in this kind of pre-internet weird time when it was hard to figure out where gay bars were and you just had to kind of rely on things that other people told you. And so he found this gay bar that wasn't really a gay bar, but was a gay-friendly bar and lots of gay people went there, called The Mill. And we're going to find out all about it in this week's episode. We talk all about growing up, figuring out who you are, finding other boys to experiment with, sometimes in the toilets of your all-boys school, and coming out of the other end of all of that shame and getting to the point where you just want to sing from the rooftops about your queerness. That sounded really cheesy. Why don't we just get into the episode?
I knew that I was into boys and sexually attracted to boys, I would say, probably from the age of 12 or 13. I don't think I'd have put the word gay on it at that point, because people didn't talk, did they, back then about being gay.
So just flamer, massive hammer.
Yeah, like homosexual. I always hate that word. Homosexuals.
I like it, but only if you say it in that way. Homosexual.
Yeah, right. But it was usually said by, like, you know, Tories, these homosexuals, which never sounded particularly nice. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, good point.
I have no problem where people are like, I'm a homosexual, darling. Like, but yeah, as a criticism, not fun. You know, faggot, queer, homo, gaybo was a big one.
Oh, gaybo. I mean, sorry, I know it was used to taunt you, but it's kind of like, it's kind of sweet.
Oh, no, I just mean in general in society. I'm not sure I was ever called a gaybo, but people at school, you know, they'd always be like, oh, you're such a gaybo. Oh, you're such a gaybo. You're so gay. But that was later on. No, I don't think I ever associated, like, I'm gay, but I absolutely was into boys. And then probably from about 14 onwards, I was like, I'm totally gay.
Oh, okay. So in this period between being 12 and 14, let's say, when you realized you were into boys, but you hadn't put a label on it, were you like, oh no, I'm straight, but I just happen to fancy boys? Or were you like, oh, just nothing?
Do you know what? It's a really good question, and it's a really hard one to be able to answer really honestly.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Now.
Remember what you were doing when you were 12?
Remember how I was internally processing my sexuality all those years ago? But I think probably the former. I think I was like, I'm into girls because I have girlfriends, and by girlfriends, I mean I snog girls and hold their hands. But, you know, regularly, and therefore we're dating.
Even though there's no tingle.
Right. Well, I reckon there's a tingle maybe between the age of 11 and 12, and that all just became like, exactly, there's no tingle. This is just going through the motions. But so I think I probably always said to myself, oh, it's okay. Like, I'm into girls too in those early years. I mean, it wasn't until I snogged a boy that the deal was sealed.
Wait, at 14?
Okay, it's a weird timeline for me. The first time I actually kissed a boy, as in properly kissed a boy, and it was amazing, I was 14. But I had been doing stuff with boys from, I actually think, about 12 or 13.
And when you say doing stuff, you mean like playing snakes and ladders?
Well, yeah, you know, snakes and ladders, badminton. Going for nice walks. Bit of badminton, a bit of shopping. No. sneaking off into toilets and having a bit of fun. It would start in like separate cubicles, and then like eventually it would end up being in the same cubicle. And then maybe you'd be like, oh, should we like switch and stuff? You know, but the person I was doing that with was at my school, and it was... we barely really exchanged any words between us, if I'm really honest. We barely even spoke to each other. You would kind of arrive for this moment, do it, and then kind of go your separate ways.
And were you friends with this person?
Not in a school context. No.
So how did it happen? Like, how?
If I remember correctly, if I really, really, really go back to the very first time, swapping stories while both being bored fielding during cricket at my school, stories about watching like naughty films and stuff. And then, you know, you talk about like, oh my God, this feels really crude because I'm actually talking about like the sexual talk of 12-year-old boys. But, you know, having conversations with each other about, you know, oh, do you do this and do you do that? And then like, oh, I'll prove it.
Interesting. Okay.
And then it, you know, just escalated from there over, but we're talking about over a period of time. It wasn't all like, oh, let's hook up on day one at like 12 or 13.
Let's stop playing and go and, yeah, okay.
Right. It kind of just, that relationship developed with this one particular guy at my school. But like I said, it never became kissing or like actually like romantic. It was very much transactional.
But so interesting that you did that for a number of years, however many times.
Yeah.
But you didn't get the tingle until you kissed someone else.
Yeah. And by that, now I'm thinking it's supposed to be what you mean by the tingle. I mean, I was totally into what I was doing.
Yeah, maybe we need to define the tingle. Yeah.
You need to define the tingle. Is your word. Go
yeah,
for it.
Because I'm assuming that there was a leakage in that transaction.
Mm. Yeah.
But if we go back, we were talking about this period of time between 12 and 14 when you'd recognized you fancied boys, mm-hmm. but you hadn't kind of labeled it and got to the point where you were accepting of it, which I think happened when you kissed that boy.
Yeah, well, I didn't really understand it. I think what it was is that the way it would work is that boys and girls dated. Oh, who are you going out with now? I'm going out with this person. Then a few weeks later, you break up and then you go out with another person. I was definitely part of that scene, going out with the girls,
lucky.
Going to school discos and like who's the groups of boys talking about which girl they were going to get with that night and stuff. I was definitely like in that world and aware of it, but I also knew that I was doing this separately outside of that, in secret and in private. And I wasn't discussing that with anyone. So I saw the two things as kind of different. I didn't see what I was doing with a boy as like a romantic relationship, but I was dating him. That was never even conscious. I wouldn't have thought in my mind until the first time I kissed a boy. And then I was like, oh, wow, you can do this with boys too? Boys do this.
But so who was this boy? You don't need to name names, don't worry.
No, I won't name his name, but he was a guy from my drama group, an external, it wasn't at school. I went to a thing called It's now called, I think, the Television Workshop, but back then it was called Central Television Workshop, shortened to Central. So I just be like, I'm going to Central today. And it was a guy from there who I'd known. Mm-hmm. A little quick, boring, I won't bore you with the details, but it was a drama group that's quite well known even now. And it met every day of the week, but the group that you were in would meet two times a week, and then other sets of people would meet two times a week. So I was on Tuesdays and Saturdays. This guy was on like Mondays and Thursdays or whatever. So we didn't go to drama group together. But at the end of each like term, there would be like a kind of disco where everyone got together, and there was a big party. And we kind of snuck off there and ended up... I don't know, for me, it always ended up for me that you would do the sexual stuff first and then the other stuff came later. So we kind of ended up upstairs in a little private room together. Trying to test, you know, like testing the waters, saying things and seeing if the other person responded. And clearly we were both responding quite keenly to what each other was saying. And then it all kind of went from there. And then we ended up kind of having a sexual experience together. And then I got his phone number. And I then started chasing him and trying to like hook up with him outside of drama group. And then I ended up, long story short, I ended up going over to his house. He invited me around when his parents were out. In fact, shameless self-promotion, I actually literally have a song about this and this guy on my first album called Nottingham, surprisingly enough. And I ended up over at his house, and then like we leaned in for a kiss. He actually kissed me. And it literally blew my mind.
So hang on. Before we get into this mind-blowing, you had numerous sexual encounters before he kissed you?
With him, just one, yeah.
Oh, with him, just one, okay.
Yeah, we just like jerked off together in a room. And I afterwards, I was like, I'm not going to want to do it again, but I don't know you. Can you have your phone number? Yeah. And I called him on the landline.
Oh, was it a rotary phone?
No, I think by this point we graduated to pushing buttons.
Oh, it's just not as satisfying.
No, it isn't. We did have a rotary one when I was a kid, I think, but they were too slow.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially if there were lots of nines in the phone number.
Oh, God. Nines were a killer.
There'll be some people listening to this that have no idea what we're talking about. Right. So, mind blown.
Mm.
So I can pretty much imagine what that mind-blowing sensation was. But talk to me about the days following the mind-blown and the acceptance or the realization, applying a label to your sexuality.
Huh. You know, when reflecting on it, especially now in 2023, it seems so fucked up, the kind of the crazy emotions you go through as a queer person, especially back when you couldn't really tell anyone. Because I'm just thinking now, like... So the moment was amazing. Then I spent the night there and it was amazing. And then the next day I was literally on cloud nine. And what one would do in normal circumstances is you would want to go and tell everyone and go singing through the streets and tell all your friends and like celebrate it. And I remember going home and just being completely on my own in my bedroom and just being like, I literally have no one to tell. I can't talk about it. I just intrinsically knew, quote unquote, knew that I couldn't talk about it. So I was deliriously happy and kind of, I think, instantly really depressed at the same time, because I was like, well, now what? When am I going to see him again? And I don't even know if he's bothered or wants to see me again. And it's not like you could just text each other. The only way to communicate was through a phone call, through each other's parents, you know, answering the phone, saying, oh, I'll go and get him and stuff. And I don't know. So I felt I couldn't communicate with him, wasn't going to see him again at drama group. So I didn't really know what to do. So I think it was a mixture of this is amazing and... desperately wanting to do it again and not being able to, and then the depression kicking in. What have I done? Like, what's wrong with me? Like, is this gross? Is this wrong? Oh my God, what the fuck? And then this like complete despair. It's so weird. Like, I'm just like thinking about it now, like it's really fucked up, like how instantly the happiest moment of your life up to that point is also the most shameful and depressing.
So you've said despair, you've said depression, and I'm like, I want to have this conversation. But quickly, just picking up on what you said about the phone and the technology that you had available to you at that time, it's super interesting that in this day and age, everyone's so accessible and there are so many different avenues by which you can communicate with people. And so many, like, within that, so many different ways. Like, you know, I have one friend and all I do is send memes to them and then we don't talk about like what's going on in our lives, but like this is how we communicate with each right. other. But back then there was this intentionality with communication. Like it couldn't just be this, I'll send this text message, like it'll take 30 seconds. Right. Like you had to have a purpose and the intent behind your communication. And that also meant that because it wasn't as easy to communicate with people, you didn't just send them text messages all the time and like love bomb them and right. flood them. You had to really, really tactically think about when you were going to communicate with them.
It's true. And additionally to all that, if they had strict parents, it was almost impossible because you have to go through the parents. You can't a 14-year-old be calling another 14-year-old and you might get, hey, can you put so-and-so on the phone?
Like, well, you can, but then there would be like all of the judgment in the tone of voice of the parent who answered the phone.
Yeah. Totally. You learned it, you to navigate your friend's parents in different ways. You knew the ones you had to, I'd say, schmooze. Hello, Mr. So-and-so, how are you? Another one, could you be like, hey, so-and-so there.
Yeah, or like time it because you know that they're going to be out. It's going to be like after school, so the person that you're trying to contact is going to be home, but it's not late enough that their parents are going to be back from work.
Right.
Oh, this is exhausting. But also kind of nice because like anyone who actually got through to you cares.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure I thought about that at the time, but you're absolutely right. Yeah. I mean, that was a way, I don't know about you, but I used to stay up 4 hours through my teenage years, literally hours, just like talking to one or two people like every evening, you know, arguments with your parent, we get off the phone. And then in the late 90s, like, I can't get on the internet because he's on the phone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't think I've said, no, you hang up for like 20 years.
Oh my God, yeah. No, you hang up. And then someone walks up behind you and just puts the phone down for you.
No. Now I've got to ring them back to say, okay, good night. Yeah.
And I seem to recall that this guy, I keep nearly saying his name, I seem to recall he wasn't really a phone person anyway. And so I think it was a bit like, see you around. And I was not okay with that. We need to make an arrangement. I'll just see you when I see you. I was like, no.
I need a plan. I need to at least have some kind of vague arrangement.
It's impossible to find other gay people. What the fuck? Don't leave me hanging.
Okay, so forget about the phones for a minute. This depression and despair. Let's get back on that. Let's get on the juicy stuff.
Oh, yeah, easy topics.
How did you navigate your way through that? And, like, was it, maybe I can get rid of this gay thing? Or was it like, yes, I'm gay, but how am I going to survive?
I think I simultaneously loved it and hated it. Eventually, I just loved it, but the way that I got through it was when I eventually had either queer friends, which was very few and far between, and or came out to a couple of very few but close supportive friends. And that's how I eventually navigated my way through it. But until that point, I suppose I was just, I don't think it's too crude to say, like, I think I was just driven by like lust. So even if I was feeling like shitty about like, what does it mean? Like going off into cubicles with this guy at school or snogging this guy or doing stuff with boys. Like, oh my God, what does that make me? Does that make me? Even though there's that going on, I still just wanted to do it all the time. So there's that always that weird contradiction of like thinking that you should hate yourself based on what you see in the media and what you're hearing in the press and seeing on TV and hearing friends and family talk about like in passing versus how you actually feel yourself about it. And it's a weird balance to strike. So I think the real truth is, I don't think I know how to answer that question now as an adult about how I felt at the time, because it's only as a few years pass, you can look back and understand what you must have been feeling at the time. But it was definitely, I started looking down at the floor more and I started being a lot more scared maybe of getting caught or being found out and having to then act slightly different so no one would know I was doing these things. I then eventually, the first person I came out to was my closest female friend in Nottingham. And she was super supportive and very sweet about it. Presumably already knew. Because I'd also had like a bit of like a thing with her as well around the same time. And I'm guessing she probably instinctively was aware that this kid's probably gay. He's really not into me in the way that other boys are or should be.
There's no tingle here. What's going on?
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah. So, I mean, as we know, support is everything, but you don't really know you're looking for it until you find it.
Or how you need it to look.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, when I told her, I did, and it was the first time this happened, but I think I like burst out crying when I told her. I don't think I said I think I'm gay, but I said I'm wanking off this other boy or something like that. And she was like, okay, it's okay. Like, you're being really supportive. She's like, so you go into the bathroom together and you both take down your pants. And she's like, that's all right. And I was like, cool, okay. I think that I kind of kept, I don't know, there's just something so like amazing in that moment to feel that you've got that support.
And she gave you permission as well. Like, oh, okay, well, if you think it's okay, I'm going to go off and do it now. Bye.
Exactly. That's the word, permission. And it could have gone so differently. I suppose she'd been like, that is disgusting. But I think I only told her because I felt so comfortable with her. And I knew that I didn't think it would be an issue. Mm. And it wasn't, which was amazing.
So my assumption is that this is not the conversation that you had with your parents when you came out. It's not the way you framed it to them.
It was not the way I framed it, though, but I was also a lot older.
So. Oh, okay. Oh, how much older?
I mean, there's a big gap between this 14-year-old and when I actually... I mean, I'm sure my parents knew I was gay way before this, but when I actually said the words to my mum, I was... Let me work this out. I can tell you exactly. It would have been around January, February 2001. So I'd have been 19. So I'd been off to university and I was coming back home after the first term of university.
Bathed yourself in homosexuality. Yeah.
All of that. Yeah. In fact, I actually brought home with me my mate, who was the guy I was shagging. But I didn't bring him home in order to come out. What happened was I brought him home because we were shagging. I went to stay at his in Manchester and then he came back with me. And I remember saying, please don't tell my mum because I haven't told her yet. And she was like, of course I'm not going to. He was really sweet. He was like, of course I'm not going to say anything. He's like, babe, gay people get it. Like, you don't have to worry about it. I'm not going to say anything to your mum. Hilariously, retrospectively, it's so funny. He was so camp and so overtly gay that there's no way the second he walked in the door, my mum didn't know that I just brought home a gay guy. Whether or not I was like sleeping with him was irrelevant. Like, so anyway, so he stayed for a bit and then he left and then I was like, right, I'm gonna do this. Aww. And then I told my mum. So I was 19, so there was, what's that math, it's not very good at math, so there's like 5 or 6 years in, I'd say 6 or 7 years in between starting to do stuff with boys and actually coming out verbally to my parents. But like I said, I'm sure my mum knew.
So, like, I know this sounds really super judgmental, but there's no real way for me to ask in any other way. Why did it take so long to come out to your mum?
I don't quite know how to answer this. It's a good question, though. Timing and ease. I was nervous about a response and a reaction, and I think it was easier to wait till I wasn't living at home. Again, I'm saying this retrospectively. I wasn't like, there is a plan. I will leave home and then I will come out. But I think probably because I didn't have to really answer many questions if I wasn't at home.
And you could leave her alone to figure it out.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And also everything I'm about to say now is I'm just thinking off the top of my head. This hasn't been like things I've thought all the last however many years since. But I'm just thinking like maybe there's an element where if I don't actually say it or come out while I'm living at home, I can have boys stay over or I can kind of do gay stuff without it being questioned or considered or looked at. Yeah. And additionally to that, probably scared of the reaction, didn't want my mum to think badly of me, didn't know how she would respond, didn't want to ruin our relationship because I adore my mum. All of it's fine, by the way, now. Like, none of that transpired to be the case. But those were all the fears, I suppose, and the worries. And I suppose there's a part of me that hoped she would just know so we didn't have to go through the bother of having to do it. And I think as I hit a certain age, when I got to about 19, I think I said, yeah, I think I probably was like, it out of respect and to myself and to my mum, I need to just have this conversation. I need to bite the bullet. Oh, my God, I was terrified. horrified, and she could see it, and I could see that she could see it.
Oh, okay. So it was a conversation that you had specifically planned. I am going to go in and I'm going to say this. It wasn't just like, oh, it's come up naturally in conversation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Rip the Band-Aid off. Okay.
Yes. Ooh. Oh, hang on. Yes to all of that, but did something come up about being gay? Because I said, well, you know, I'm gay. So that must have been in response to something. So there must have been a conversation we were having. It's funny, isn't it, what you remember? I remember me saying that, but I don't remember the few minutes building up to that moment. Huh. I don't know. The whole thing is a bit of a blur because the whole thing was quite traumatic. And I want to just say very specifically, my mum didn't make it traumatic. Just the experience was traumatic in my own head and just doing it.
But what was her response to it? And you know I'm gay.
Are you? Are you sure? As in, I mean, I did think so, but are you? Yeah. Are you definitely? It was almost like there was an understanding.
Surprise.
Yeah, there was an understanding between us. I think that she already knew. I knew she knew. She knew that I knew she knew, but it needed to be heard out loud. I think I probably tried not to look at her because I didn't want to see if there was disappointment or not. I don't know. It was a tricky moment to navigate, but I am really, really glad that I was able to do it. And that I wasn't outed or I wasn't walked in on or something didn't happen, as far as I know anyway. Something didn't happen that kind of made it like, fuck, like, damn, that's not how I wanted to do it. Like, that's how I wanted to do it. So I'm really pleased that that happened. But, you know, it was in 2001. And I think coming out, I can't speak on behalf of young people now in 2023, but I would assume coming out is always quite tricky, no matter who you are, no matter what the situation, especially with family. Back then, it was pretty hard. You know, it's not that hard to open your mouth and say, I'm gay, but the whole build-up to it, and what that entails and the judgment that you're fearing and all of that, it's an absolute minefield to navigate. Well, it was for me anyway.
Okay, so let's go back then to this 14-year-old you who has just said, oh, I wanked someone off in the toilet to his friend and has now kind of verbalized this and it's out there in the world and someone knows about your queerness.
Yeah.
What did that feel like?
In that moment, liberation. I was sobbing, but I think that soon stopped. And I felt, I suppose, validated, like you said before, that I could, that was okay, at least in the eyes of my friend. Then it was great. And then I was like, right, let's try and do it again. That's fine. Let's try and like go over again or have him come around here. Which he did do a few times, actually.
Oh. I thought you meant, let's tell someone else.
Oh, right.
No, you were just like, oh, cool, I've got permission to have sex. Off I go.
Yeah, right. I go tell everybody. That's what I'm doing. No. It just remained a well, in my mind, a well-kept secret then. I know, having spoke to them since, and at the time, girls who I then like did stuff with and dated, who I clearly would push their hands away when it started going any further than kissing. A couple of years later, while still in Nottingham, I'm sure I remember speaking to a couple of those girls at the time and then being like, yeah, I think it was pretty obvious to one of us that you were not like all the other boys, like you were not at all into us whatsoever, and we'd laugh about it.
And so what was it like to be in your body a gay person and be in that city and think,
I don't want to sound too over dramatic, but I think it's really fair to say traumatic, really traumatic. I was also at an all boys school.
Oh, the wanking in the toilets makes much more sense now.
Right. Do you know, this is what I always think. I always think all these years later, like, God, I wonder how much of that was going on and why wasn't I in on the action if there was other people? But I feel like I knew about the one or two people in my year. But I think that's the thing with the 90s and pre-90s is that no one talked about it at the time, so you didn't really know. So I'm like, God, what if like loads of people in my school were gay? And then, damn, like, I wish I'd known about it. Having said that, I don't think so. It was very conservative and very straight.
Have you met conservative people? I'm sorry.
Anyway, so yeah, I found the whole thing quite traumatic, both at school, where, and I'm going to be very clear about this, it wasn't just socially not accepted. There were plenty of homophobic teachers who would say awful things and like actually make homophobic comments and just things that they just teachers should not have been saying, which were just taken for a given. Like one of my my old English teachers actually said something along the line. There's a book, oh, I can't be asked to bore you with the details, but there's a book in which at the end, a character who has killed themselves, it turns out that they had had sex with a man. And the English teacher, when we got to the big twist at the end, was like, well, I mean, you would kill yourself, wouldn't you, if you'd done that and stuff like that. You know, thing. It was all these like microaggressions nonstop from old school, hardcore, right wing boys' school teachers in their 50s and 60s and 70s. And it was just constant like barrage of that crap going on. And I was living in a city that I was personally terrified of from about the age of 14 up, about gangs and violence and scared of getting beaten up, actually being beaten up. And lad culture in the 90s was rife.
And ladettes, let's not leave out the ladettes.
Oh yeah, ladettes, yeah. Yeah, it's funny, when I say lad culture, I just mean the culture of anyone of any gender, just like loudly, angrily drunk and starting fights everywhere.
It's a lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle. And so I found all of that really traumatic. So when I knew I was gay, like I said, like there was the terror of being found out or people knowing, and then adding that onto that's going to be another reason that people are going to come for me. Or what if people can tell? So I would adapt my walk. I would make sure that I didn't act in a way that was camp or like obvious, which I really resent now. I resent this idea that A, you should hide those traits, or B, that you should think there are defining traits, you know? Because all of the above should be welcomed and joyous and wonderful. But at the time, they were giveaways. They were ways that I could be found out and, well, attacked physically.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, but for me, in any of those types of situations, I'm not just talking about the high levels of queerness that emanate from me, but if I'm in any situation where I feel like I need to tone something down, I can't apply any nuance to that. And so go from like, you know, who I am to just like this absolute husk of a person, because I don't know how to just bring it down a few notches. And so then I'm just like paralyzed.
Well, so you just quash that part of you entirely?
Just like quash everything. Like if it's, you know, what you described in being aware of how you're walking and how you're talking and how you're presenting to the world, the only way that I can minimize who I am is to just be like absolutely nothing. So say nothing, look no one in the eye, don't like make any movements or gestures, just be still.
Do you know what is really sad? It's like so sad to hear you say that. And I empathize entirely, because that is a large part of what I felt from time to time in certain scenarios. Not all the time, you know. Other times I was very confident and, you know, I was in drama group, I went to dad's class, I loved performing and doing all this stuff. But yes, in social situations, I can totally relate.
Wait, we've lost the thread of this conversation. Oh, what I wanted to ask was about being in Nottingham and being gay and not having opportunities to practice being gay, like to, you know, go out there and kind of just be gentle with yourself and find things out, which is often available in queer spaces. What was that like?
Hell, like torture, like awful. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It was just horrible. I felt, in terms of my sexuality and being around other gay and queer people, I felt there was nothing, nowhere, no one I could turn to. Sure, I had one or two supportive friends, but supportive and being accepting and actually like saying, hey, come on, let's go together and find your people for you, they're totally different. So I felt very, very alone. I felt very just like bereft of the outward sexual social life that everyone around me seemed to be having with their straight friends. The girls and the boys were always copping off and talking about it and holding hands and in partnerships and switching and swapping. And I tried to get involved in all of that earlier, but I wanted to be doing it with boys and I just couldn't. And I didn't know where to go and I didn't know where to meet people. So like I said about the guy at my drama group, it was literally chance encounters, which I would then jump on, like quite literally. It's like, yes, it's happening. So I didn't really care who it was happening with as long as it was happening. I found somebody, right, this has to happen. I was constantly finding or listening to other conversations to hear someone who was gay. I actually remember once
girl who lived in my building that I had like a friendship with in one of the places I lived with my mum were in a flat, and somebody else that lived in the building I was good friends with. And one day she was like, I went to hang out with her and her school friends. They were at an entirely different school. I didn't know any of them. And one day she just, a couple of them were saying that their friend was gay. Like the guy friend at their school was gay. And I'm listening in going, oh my God, this is so exciting. But my friend who brought me along, whose friends were saying this, started crying. And she's like, don't say that. Stop it. Like, why would you say that? Like, that's awful. Like I really hope he's not as terrible. Like, I can't be friends with him. And I was like, you know, so it's things like that. So there's
joy and pain.
So but in all these situations, I'm trying to listen out for like, is this a situation where I might be able to meet? Could I meet this guy? How can we arrange this to happen? That it didn't happen with this guy. But I mean, I was always trying to like listen into conversations to find out where there are gay people. It was hard. I found it really
Children,
difficult.
This is life before the internet. Just so you're yes. aware. It was really bloody hard out there.
Yes.
Right. the mill, which is what we're here to talk about, and we're like, you know,
right.
quite a while in, so we probably should introduce it to the conversation. Do you remember the first time you went there?
Yeah, and I'm really sorry, but it really is this wonderful story. There was nobody there. It was like empty. And I don't even know who I went with. Oh God, did I even go on my own? I don't think I would have had the courage to go on my own. But I don't remember any experience of being there with someone. I only remember the person that I got with while I was there the second time. But see, that's kind of what I was saying before. So, you know, like, you might have friends, one, two more friends who were supportive. They accept you. They're cool with you being gay. That's okay by them. They don't mind. Like, you be you. That's very different to kind of jumping on board and being like, look, there's got to be people out there that you can be having the same fun with that we're all having with our straight friends. Like, let's come with you. Let's explore this world. Let's see if we can help you. And I'm not saying it's people's responsibility to like take on a project, but I didn't have anyone to go with. So by the time I started going to the mill in about 99, I definitely had a couple of, well, three or four queer friends in London, but no one in Nottingham. So in Nottingham, I didn't really have anyone to go out on any scene with, even if the scene had been massive. Like, I didn't know. And I was far too scared, like I said, to go on my own. Like, what if I got beat up because I got in there? Like, what if someone saw me coming out? Like, it was really, I was really frightened.
Well, so let me bring stuff. A friend so they'll get beaten up as well.
Yeah. Well, I think it was more if I go with a girl, it's okay because then
plausible
like,
deniability.
She can just be my girlfriend.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we can go in holding hands and then let go as we walk in, like that thing. So I only went like maybe two or three times. And I remember one time I went with my close friend. I don't remember who I went the first time, but one of these three times I went with a close friend, and there was honestly, there was about three or four people in there, including the bar staff. And I remember being really deflated, being like, I'd been really excited to go. And I thought, this might be where I find my people and like my scene. And it was not. There was hardly anyone in there. And I think maybe it's to do with the fact that it wasn't a designated gay bar. Maybe it's similar reasons to me. Maybe people weren't particularly comfortable going there because it wasn't like full of people.
And so in that moment, were you like, okay, let's just leave because it's dead? Or were you a hopeful optimist of like, maybe it'll pick up if I just stay?
I think the latter. I was definitely optimistic. Like, I was really depressed and like a nervous kid at home on my own. But out in public, I felt I tried to be quite optimistic and stuff like often. But I do. I really strongly remember being there, being like, shit. Like, what am I going to do? Just like, have a drink on my own at the bar. My overwhelming feeling was one of being completely underwhelmed by the experience the first time that I went. And the last time that I went, I remember more fondly because I actually went with a friend from school who was a friend later on towards the end of school. When I say school, sorry, there was a boys' school, there was a girls' school, and she was at the girls' school, which was next door. And she was on a netball team, I think. No, it was a hockey team. And so she had a whole bunch of friends that were lesbians, and they were all going out together for the night to the mill. Aww. And asked if I wanted to go with, and I was like, yes, I do. And so they kind of like took me under their wing, and they took me there. And I was actually, I remember that was really nice, being kind of taken by a bunch of lesbians. I don't know. I just felt like they were looking out for me. And they were a lot older as well, most of them. So they were probably in their early 20s. So they were like kind of like motherly figures. And I felt really safe. And I went with them.
And they introduced me to their mate who they were meeting there, this guy who we'll call Lee.
And are we calling him Lee because that's his name, or have we made a name up for him?
I think we are, yes. I'm calling him Lee because that's his name, because that's all I know about him. I don't know what his last name was. I don't know what his last name was, and I never saw him again, I don't believe, after that night. But they basically, I feel like what really happened is they took me in, dropped me off with Lee, and then they went off and had a nice night. And I was kind of with this guy. And so we just had a really nice evening together. We had a drink together.
Or was it? Oh, it'll be really great for us to get to know Matt. Let's hang out with him tonight. Oh, where's Matt? Oh, he's over there with Lee. Oh, he's ignoring us. He doesn't care about us.
I may have misremembered. I may have just been like, see, yeah, there's a gay boy here. I'm not sure which way around it started, but I know how it ended. And it ended by me going to rejoin them at a restaurant much later in the evening.
Sans Lee? Oh, because you'd done your business and you
so we'd done our business, right? Behind the meal.
So romantic.
But after we had done our business behind the meal, this is basically my one lasting memory of this place. He decided to tell me that he was married to a woman and that he had kids. My first thought was like, what the fuck? You're really young. How is that possible? So he must have at least been in his 20s. But yeah, I remember being like, oh, that's...
Yeah, it's weird to bring that up now. Thanks.
Yeah. So it's like, well, nice getting to know you. Just going to go off and find my lovely hockey playing friends.
So that wasn't a meant to be situation then?
Not really. I mean, just as a side note, after that, started coming down to London a lot. Moved to Liverpool, went to a lot of thriving, amazing gay spaces, but specifically in Nottingham. That was about the extent of my experience on the and any gay scene, nightlife scene in Nottingham. And I know the Mill has long since gone.
Okay. So the Mill was important, but not important, and kind of formative, but kind of not formative.
Yeah, it's part of my story, but it's not really where anything life-changing particularly
I hope happened. Lee's not listening to this. He's going to be gutted.
Oh yeah, but that happened outside the bill, so we don't thank the venue for that.
If you could give words of advice to Matt, who has just jacked off some rando from his school in the sorry, I keep bringing this up. Just jacked some guy off in the toilet of his school. Yeah. And is like, I might make this a hobby of mine. What words of advice would you give him?
In the immediate aftermath?
Not necessarily in the immediate aftermath. I'm just thinking like, you know, let's think about that particular
the guy at that
boy.
Age.
Yeah.
The advice I would give would be do not ever have shame about or question who you are. It is fabulous and you're going to end up loving it and go for it. Which, to be fair, is kind of what I did. I kind of gave myself that advice at the time, I think, because I can only say this in retrospect, but I've really followed that path. I've really tried to celebrate my sexuality, especially through my music, which is my main outlet for it. And I've really tried to let myself as well as the world know that it's something to be celebrated, not ashamed of and not concerned with. And not to think negatively about, but actually that it's a positive, amazing part of you. So that's probably what I would say to try and avoid all the many years of kind of like shame and self-loathing. But I think I got there. So I'm quite, you know, I feel happy that I'm where I am now as opposed to where I was then.
Do you have any memories of the Mill or maybe clubbing from your own queer scene that you think maybe I'd be interested in finding out more about? You do? Well, why not get in touch? I plan to create the biggest online record of people's memories and stories of queer clubbing, but I need your stories in order to do that. So why not go to lostspacespodcast.com, find the section Share a Lost Space, and then tell me stuff. Tell me what you got up to. Tell me what it made you feel and what you remember from those days. You can also find me on Facebook and Instagram, where my handle is Lost Spaces Pod. Find out more about Matt by listening to his music wherever you stream it. Or no, actually, don't stream it. Why don't you throw some more money at Matt and buy his albums, like a physical copy or on iTunes? Is iTunes still a thing? Anyway, do that. And also make sure to follow him on Instagram at Matt Fischel, or visit his website, mattfischel.com. If you liked this episode, I would really appreciate if you took the time to subscribe or leave a review. And I know those sound really naff and silly, but they make a huge difference. And I'd also love if you told other people who you think might want to listen to these stories and find out about queerness and all the joy and despair that that brings. The despair. My name's Kay Anderson, and you have been listening to Lost Spaces.